Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen. In today's episode, we've dug up a good one for you. It's Jensen Huffman of Huffman Canine Obedience. He's a local dog trainer and instructor who uses science-based methods to teach owners how to build trust and confidence in their loyal pets. He'll tell us the story of a time he even helped save an overly aggressive pup from euthanasia.
Wow, what a lucky dog. We'll also be bringing you our take on the biggest podcasting news to come out of Canby since, well, since the last time somebody started a local news podcast. Hey, who was that again?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I forget. Anyway, but first, the news.
The Clackamas County Board of Commissioners voted 4-1 Thursday night to approve a countywide vehicle registration fee for $30 per year per passenger vehicle, technically $60 paid every 2 years when you renew your vehicle registration. Motorcycle owners will pay only $15 per year. Barring any other increases, it would raise your biennial registration fee from $112 to $172. The revenue will be split between the county and cities based on population and would go towards maintaining local roads and improving traffic flow and congestion with new capital projects. Unlike Multnomah and Washington counties, which receive millions in revenue each year from local gas taxes and vehicle registration fees, Clackamas County has no local source of road funding. The fee in Clackamas County is estimated to rise $11 million per year. The county's vote, in which Commissioner Paul Savas was the lone dissenter, followed a meeting that was much longer than the better-attended first hearing 2 weeks earlier. The comments expressed were largely similar to the first meeting, although there were more of them in general. Many of those who spoke opposed the new fee. A number of commenters said the issue should go before the voters, including Canby City Councilor Tracy Hensley, though she made it clear that she was speaking only for herself and not in any official capacity.
Going from $112 to $172, and I just don't feel that going, and no matter how you look at it, I feel a fee is a tax, and taxing the people 54% more without their consent is just the wrong thing to do. And Commissioner Savas, you addressed the people's trust in the board. And in 2016, they said no to 3509 by a very large margin. And now this just seems and feels like an end around. And I don't see how you can go any other way but to put this before the voters. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
The fee did have its supporters, however, like Greg DiLoretto of West Lynn. He and others expressed their view and how it was a kind of a bold action that was needed to address the city's severe transportation needs, and they would support the board's decision to move forward.
You don't have to do a study to see what's out there. Now that I'm retired, I ask myself, how do people stand it? How do they sit in traffic every day? And using facilities that were built in the 1960s and the 1970s when we had 1 million people here and we're at 2.5 million. We can't afford to wait any longer to address this issue, and a $30 fee per year, or $2.50 a month, should be quite affordable. This is one citizen who supports the county's effort to address their part of the transportation problem in the Portland region.
The board, with the exception of Savas, agreed. Commissioner Ken Humberston explained why he supported the ordinance route over another attempt to woo voters.
So 42 years ago, the citizens said put it up for vote. And they put it up for vote and it didn't pass. And 7 times since then, the citizens said put it up for vote and it didn't pass. And here we sit today and we have no local source of funding to maintain our roads, and they are getting worse and worse and worse every single year. So at some point, the people that are elected to public office have to make a responsible decision to take care of the infrastructure that has been paid for by citizens in the past and make sure that the next generation has an infrastructure that works for them.
Of course, the fee could go to the voters anyway, if the citizens chose to undertake the petition process and refer it to the ballot. Several commissioners acknowledged this as a risk they were willing to take. The Canby City Council decided Wednesday that Canby's new splash pad will go in, wait for it, the Maple Street Park. The park in Northeast Canby was recommended by the Canby Parks and Recreation Advisory Board as the best, easiest, and most cost-effective option of the various alternatives, which also includes Legacy Park near Ackerman Center and Waite Park in downtown Canby. The decision was not without lengthy discussion and some contention. Several councilors expressed preference for Waite Park because of its more central location, its potential to serve economic development functions by drawing people downtown, and, well, it's simply a more well-known and well-loved park than Maple Street. Here's Council President Tim Dale.
I think the emotional favorite of the council, and probably staff and the Parks Board, has been around Waite Park. It's always been kind of the living room, as we call it, or at least some downtown location.
Yeah.
But we've not seen that passion be able to overcome the physical and developmental barriers that have been identified. And so that takes Waite Park off the list. I wish it could be there. I'm not opposed to taking down trees if necessary. We know that we have some issues there. Yeah, I know my email box will blow up after that.
Though the city's charter allows him to only vote in the event of a tie, Mayor Brian Hodson also expressed his preference for Waite. Councillor Sarah Spoon said she would support Maple Street recommendation because having a splash pad anywhere is a net win for Canby. But she had concerns about placing the water feature at a location that is not central and currently has no public transit or sidewalk access.
We're presuming that because the primary age of users is 9 and under, that means someone that's driving is going with them. And I don't think that's universally true. And it disappoints me that we'll be putting a splash pad somewhere that is not accessible to our most at-risk families and middle-class families that don't have an adult home during the summer in the middle of the day. I'm not going to obstruct it from happening. I'm not going to stop it from happening. I think it's a net win to get it. But I think that I hope that in the future we apply that lens to not just presume that people are going to drive there.
The main problems with Waite were that locating the pad there would require a redesign of the park and probably the removal of trees. Popular summer events that were based around Waite Park might have conflicted or had to be reworked. While it's true that none of these barriers are necessarily insurmountable, with a little creativity and the political will to overcome them, it's also true that Maple Street Park's not having any of these issues made it an overall more attractive location. The council ultimately voted 6-0 to proceed with a design and construction of a splash pad at Maple Street Park. Details like size and cost won't be known until the process is further along, but it's certain that the feature won't be completed in time for this summer, as the Parks Board had initially hoped. Instead, look for Canby's new splash pad in time for next summer of 2020.
Canby Cougars girls basketball team narrowly missed their playoff bid as they fell Friday to St. Mary's 48-43. They ended the season 10-15 and 6-8 in league play. The boys started the season 5-6 but had a rough go in the Three Rivers League, winning only two games. Overall, a strong effort from a young team with a bright future ahead of them. Also, the state wrestling championships were held this weekend in Portland, and Canby was well represented. The big story was junior Logan Doman, who was dominant in his weight class on the first day of the tournament, becoming the first Canby wrestler since 2014 to move into the semifinals at the Veterans Memorial Coliseum. He was matched up against Landon Davis from Sprague. It was a hard-fought contest, but Landon ultimately took home the victory 7-2. Great effort by Logan. You make Canby proud. And hey, there's always next year. We'll see you in the spring.
Hey, I'm Steve, owner of the FOB Tap Room in Canby.
And I'm Jen, the head bartender.
FOB stands for Friends of Beer, and that's what we are. It's even on my business card.
He's not kidding. It really is.
What?
Oh, nothing. Beer is practically an art form in the Pacific Northwest, and the FOB is the best place to enjoy all of your old favorites and even find some new ones. We have a constantly rotating selection of 36 of the best craft beers, ciders, and wines from right here in Oregon and around the world.
We also host an awesome trivia night on Wednesdays with tap takeovers and new release parties every month. There's always something going on here, so please come on by. We'd love to see you.
Find us in Canby Place on Southwest Berg Parkway and on Facebook and Instagram.
See you at the FOB.
The Dog by Ogden Nash. The truth I do not stretch or shove when I state that the dog is full of love. I've also found by actual test a wet dog is the lovingest. My guest today is Jensen Huffman. He's the owner of Huffman Canine Obedience and the Dog Whisperer of Canby, as I believe he's known.
That's not a bad thing to be known
to me and maybe a few others. So Jensen, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being on the show today. Can you tell us a little bit about your company and what you do?
Sure. Huffman Canine Obedience is a dog training school, which is much more directed towards training owners than it is necessarily dogs. We work directly with owners and help them create really stable, obedient pets that they can really enjoy.
You guys workshopped the name Huffman Owner Obedience, but that didn't play as well.
That's right. I know. Nobody wants to be obedient
So you have to be a little more subtle with that kind of
thing.
So, but you do work with all kinds of dogs.
Every dog you can think of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. All breeds, all ages, all sizes.
Yeah. You're telling me you tend to specialize a little bit in kind of the more, I guess, maybe owners might think of as kind of problem cases or the dogs that might be aggressive or might have issues with other dogs being scared of them, of other dogs or having difficulty there?
So we call dogs, those dogs reactive.
Okay.
And that word reactive really embodies just about all the different out of the box personality kind of deals, anything from aggression to fear to hyper excitement and kind of that uncontrollable bouncing, barking, whining, you know, all of those
yipping.
Absolutely. All the sort of instabilities out there.
A lot of things that dog owners don't like, right? Like it
absolutely.
Sounds like you're talking about a lot of the behavior that it encompasses a range, but it's if a dog owner has an issue with their dog, it sounds like it's kind of falls into a lot of this.
Yeah, it's the type of stuff that they've gone elsewhere and they weren't able to rectify, and they've found the solution here.
Okay.
So,
How did you get into it?
So I've been training dogs for about 18 years.
Okay.
Started training dogs back right before I graduated in chemical engineering from Oregon State. So I'm a Beaver.
Just as a hobby?
I was a rescue diver, a technical diving instructor, and was doing a deep water recovery dive up in the Puget Sound.
And there you found dogs underwater? And just
there was a search and rescue team that was working the riverbank, and I thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. My dad trained field trial hunting dogs, and I really wanted to get into it, and I saw that, and joined Search One Canine Detection out of Tualatin, and that's kind of where everything started. One thing kind of led to another, and I continue to work with dogs, both tactical working dogs, search and rescue dogs, tracking dogs, law enforcement dogs. And eventually, 3-4 years ago, I settled down up here and started Huffman Canine Obedience to teach pets a lot of the same fundamentals that we were teaching these really high-level dogs.
That's cool. So you find that that there's carryover there, that you don't need to teach them how to find explosives or, you know, rescue people, but that the foundations are really similar of just being a stable dog versus being some of these very highly trained dogs?
Yeah, and I think you actually hit the word perfectly on the head, and that is stability. What we're looking for here is to create stability in dogs. We find that stability is the confluence of four different attributes.
Okay.
The first being competency.
Uh-huh.
A dog needs to be competent.
Yeah.
They also need to be obedient. So that's the second one. A dog needs to be confident, meaning it feels comfortable in most places that it might go. And when confidence fails, because we've found that confidence is very much situational and experientially based, they need to be able to trust us. And so here what we do is we establish drills and different types of training events where we can very deliberately create all four of those different attributes from competency, obedience, competency, obedience, confidence, and trust. And I think that one place where a lot of the current training has gone awry in a lot of the dog training out there is that we're so focused on competency, teaching, that we've lost focus on creating obedience.
Yeah.
So while a dog might be obedient for a treat, once the treats go away, the dog's no longer obedient, mm-hmm. right? That's not obedience, that's just competency.
Yeah.
So we really do focus on building that obedience so that a dog will come every single time when it's called or sit when it's been asked to sit.
Cool, can I bring my kids to this?
We don't train kids.
Oh, shit.
I do have my two kids that I am actively working on training, but
different principles.
Different principles. Ironically, there's a lot that are the same.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. I feel, is this crazy? It almost sounds like you, because obviously you said you went to school for chemical engineering. Mm-hmm. Now you work with dogs. But it seems like you approach this a little scientifically. Is that accurate at all?
I think that's a fantastic way of describing it. All of our training is science-based. Mm. And when you come in here and you sit through a very first session, one of the things that we talk about in depth is looking at how stress influences different behaviors.
Yeah.
And using controlled and modulated stress, that we are able to create very consistent, successful outcomes, mm-hmm. which in a very deliberate way, we're able to create confidence. Mm-hmm. If an owner and a pet go through a stressful situation, controlled stressful situation together, we're very deliberately able to create trust. Mm. And this gets really deep into the science, but stress is actually a catalyst for growth and learning as well. Mm. So by using controlled stress, we can increase the rate of learning as well as the retention of information mm-hmm. that both dogs and humans get to experience, and it's called neuroplasticity. Mm. So the over-encompassing study that we're kind of touching on here is called stress ecology, and it's the study of stress and how stress influences everything from microorganisms all the way up to global populations.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, we are very scientifically based. It does come out of my education as well as my other careers.
Sure, sure. And that's really fascinating. And that does make sense, because you hear a lot, like people feel like kind of when they're even the most challenged in life or having a tough time, as hard as that can be, they feel like they're learning more at those times, you know?
Yeah.
And growing a lot more than they do when things are just going great, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, I'm definitely going to encourage folks, anyone who has a dog and is looking for training, like you said, have had issues trying other things, to definitely check out your company. What's your website?
So website is simple. It's HuffmanK9.com.
Okay.
And it's just K
Letter
and
K,
the number nine. Yep.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But until they get to that point, are there maybe a few tips that you could share? I know for me, and I feel like most people... we just look at, like, maybe we'll get a book mm-hmm. at the most, mm-hmm. but like mostly we'll like look at stuff online as far as, because we just got a puppy, you know, we'll look at stuff online. And I have trouble with that. I feel like it doesn't go very deep or whatnot, you know. But I wonder if other folks are the same. Are there just some things that maybe you found that are really helpful, or maybe some tips that you could share, maybe to show the people listening that you know what you're talking about or something?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the really basic fundamentals that everyone can benefit from is consistency.
Okay.
Be consistent with your pet. Mm-hmm. When you ask them to sit and they don't sit, well, you need to hold them accountable to that.
Okay.
You need to maybe push their bottom down and lift up on the collar in order to get them to sit.
Mm-hmm.
But hold them accountable and be consistent with that.
Yeah.
Ask that everyone in the house maintain the same types of boundaries that, you know, you might have.
Okay.
If a dog is allowed on the couch by one person and not allowed on the couch by another, that creates confusion, and that confusion creates all sorts of weird little neuroses where the dogs get, you know, the dogs really struggle.
Yeah.
So create consistency, create predictability for your dogs mm-hmm. so that they understand what's expected and what to expect. And by being a really good leader for them in that way, I think that you'll see a lot less of that reactive behavior, and a bit more obedience. So
that's really cool. Like with my dog, I always think, well, as long as like I'm doing the right thing, she'll know how to obey me. But you're saying, like, you know, it's got to be everyone.
It does need to be everybody. The family is kind of the leadership team, you know, within the home. So it's really helpful for especially the adults in the house to work with their dogs in consistent ways and expect the same sorts of things. It's not helpful when one person allows a dog to jump up and they sure. love up on them, and then the next person corrects him for jumping up.
Sure.
The dog doesn't know what to expect.
Any tips for, I feel like one thing that can be a big problem is aggressive dogs. Mm-hmm. You know, if people are having problems with that, what do you recommend?
Get a trainer, mm-hmm. whether that be us or someone else.
Yeah.
Find an expert. We kind of related it back to kids a little bit. If you're having problems with your kids, get a professional, mm-hmm. right? If you're having problems with aggression, get a trainer.
Yeah.
It can really make things worse if we yeah. try to fix things just from at-home remedies or off the internet. There's so many different causes of things like aggression.
Gotcha.
That one remedy may make it worse than another.
Yeah.
So I really can't give like a specific recommendation beyond find a professional who knows how to work with okay. aggressive dogs.
Can't do the WebMD approach for that type
it's,
thing.
Yeah, it's really not a good idea.
Cool.
Really not a good idea.
One thing that's kind of part of your philosophy and kind of that makes it fun to do what you do, or sort of rewarding to do what you do, is not just working with clients, kind of making their jobs easier working with their dogs, right. but there have been some dogs that were really such problem cases that they were maybe even on the verge of being put down because they,
yeah.
you know, and you were able to help those dogs. Can you tell maybe a story or two about that? Or because I think that
yeah.
really is probably a real highlight of your work. And
it is actually.
Yeah.
So interestingly enough, we actually have a couple of donors who have said, you know, you saved my dog. Mm. And I want to contribute 5 sessions to somebody who is unable to pay for it themselves.
Oh, that's so cool.
In order to save their dog.
Yeah.
So lots of reactive dogs, meaning, you know, your aggressive dogs, the dogs that may turn around and bite a child because it reached into a food bowl or something
yeah.
like this.
Yeah, that's a big, if a dog biting a child, that's like usually...
It's so emotionally
yeah.
loaded.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people immediately jump directly into euthanasia.
Yeah.
And reasonably so, they don't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
They don't know how to correct
well,
it.
Well, they feel
don't
like
know
there's
how to
a loss of trust. I feel like you could never trust that dog again.
Right.
Know? Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. And really what's going on there is that your dog simply corrected,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, that's just one type of aggression. There's all different types, but... The point being is that we are able to rehabilitate dogs. We are able to teach dogs that aggression is not an effective way of getting their way or working around humans.
Mm-hmm.
And we absolutely have a long track record of helping people. We had a woman who posted recently on Facebook in the City of Wilsonville
yeah.
Facebook page
yeah, I saw
where
this.
Yeah, where she said, I can't believe I'm writing this post, but I just don't know what else to do. Is there anyone out there who might be able to provide a referral for a group that can help put my dog down?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, he's just gotten so aggressive at this point that we're not able to continue to care for him, and he's become a liability. I saw that and just was... I mean, you know, saddened deeply by it. And I reached out to her and I said, hey, we can help.
Yeah.
And she said, you know what? I really don't think that you can. We've spent over $10,000 on this dog and nothing's worked.
Yeah.
I just can't spend one more penny.
Yeah.
So I invited her down. This was on New Year's Eve, free of charge.
Mm-hmm.
And said, hey, give me 2 hours,
yeah.
right? Just give me a 2-hour block of time with you and your dog and let's see if we can make some improvements to give you some hope.
Yeah.
And literally from that moment on, you know, I can show you the Facebook messages or
yeah.
whatnot, but from that moment on, they've made a complete turnaround. The dog is now her PTSD service dog.
Oh my gosh.
And is able to go anywhere and everywhere with her.
Yeah.
We had a patron donate 5 sessions to her, and in those 5 sessions, we were able to just make a radical turnaround for the dog. And so anyway, that was a really rewarding one that, you know, there wasn't a penny exchanged.
Yeah.
And so that was fun.
Yeah,
that was
yeah.
really, really fun to
what,
see that work.
What a cool story.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Pixar, and, if you're listening, you can...
Yeah. That's right.
We can do that. .com for the movie, right? So.
So.
One last question. One thing that I see a lot on, like in the media, like on TV shows and stuff, is that like click thing that like dog trainers do?
A clicker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? Like, what's that about?
Yeah. So a clicker is a, what we call a behavior marker.
Uh-huh.
Most trainers, and everybody's a little bit different, but most trainers use a behavior marker in order to identify a specific behavior that was achieved that was a positive behavior.
Okay.
So for example, I ask a dog to sit, the dog's butt hits the ground, I mark that the moment that it happens with a click, and then I can proceed with rewarding that behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Here at Huffman Canine, we actually don't use clickers, only because all of my clients continue to lose them. and I did as well, you know? So I absolutely understood that it was like, oh man, you know, the people that are coming in have no need to be a professional trainer. That's not their goal set. Clickers do work great for professionals because, well, they just have, it's like, you know, taking a calculator for an engineer. But the moment that clicker disappears, gets lost between the seats or in the glove box or in the purse or in the junk drawer, all the consistency for the dog goes away.
Sure.
So here what we do...
So much is dependent on that little thing.
Absolutely, yeah. Right? And we do want consistency.
Yeah.
So rather than a clicker here, we actually just use a word. And I recommend using the word good. Some people use the word yes. There's all different ways of kind of marking a behavior, but in short, it's just a very concise and poignant sound that the dog can recognize as the moment that they did something right.
Yeah.
So it kind of helps accelerate training.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Jensen, this was really fun. Thanks
yeah,
so
absolutely.
Much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, we'd love to have you on again sometime, talk about some other things that you guys do.
Very good.
If that works. But yeah, thank you so much. That website again is HuffmanCanine.com.
Yep, just HuffmanCanine.com. You can also find us on Facebook. We have a large presence there with lots of reviews.
And Instagram
as well, HuffmanCanine.
Great stories on there.
Yep, absolutely. Lots of fun pictures. And just also know that, you know, while we do heavily work with reactive dogs, we also work with puppies all the way through tracking dogs, detection dogs, law enforcement dogs, and even home protection dogs. So there's lots of different things that we do here beyond just the dogs that are a bit aggressive.
Right,
so
right,
yeah.
Right, cool.
Are you a small business owner or maybe thinking of investing in yourself with your very own startup? Awesome! Now all you have to do is reach potential customers at a time when consumers have never been more fragmented, more distracted, or more difficult to reach. If that sounds hard, believe me, it is. That's why I make Frankie do it.
Carrie and her team at Promotional Strategies offer strategic, purposeful solutions to build your brand with lasting promotional items that make sense for you and your company. They are creative geniuses who will deliver advertisements that people actually thank you for and will use every day. We've tried other sellers, and we trust Carrie to provide high-quality branded items that we can be proud of. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com. Hey, Tyler.
Hey, Frankie.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going, man. It's going real good, man.
That's...
It's doing real good,
okay.
Man.
What, are you doing a bit?
A little bit.
Welcome, listeners, to the Canby Now Soapbox. This is a segment where we're a little more podcasty, a little more laid back, kind of just being ourselves. And
I really want to make a joke right now.
Talking, just do it.
We've been working on this for over a year.
And it's finally coming to you.
It's coming. It's taken a long time, but we finally learned how to work microphones and get it all together and put it out. It took a year, but we got it.
Okay.
Man.
We'll get to that. But first, it's been what? It's been a couple weeks since we've done a soapbox. So
yeah, I think so.
How's your President's Day?
I worked on President's Day, so, you know, it was the same as every other day.
Okay, cool. I had a friend in town from Maine. So my friend Sean from college, that was really great.
Yeah.
Came out to visit, so we did all the Canby stuff. That took like half a day, and then we did some Portland stuff. We went to Courthouse Square. Have you ever been there?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Nice little iconic Portland location.
Yeah.
I was there with him and a coworker
mm-hmm.
from Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. and we were accosted by an individual. So this guy, he, and it was not, it was maybe not what you're picturing. It wasn't like really aggressive or like, so not at all. Like, wait till I, so it's an old man who is obviously of Middle Eastern descent with an extremely long, pure white beard. Comes up to us and begins singing very beautifully and like a an Indian song, Indian, the country, not Native American.
Native American.
And in the Indian language, like, we have no idea what he's saying, but it sounds very nice. He has a nice voice and everything. but still, like, we're in Portland. Yeah. We don't know this guy. He is like very, very close to us, like way up in our bubbles and everything. And it goes on for like at least 2 minutes, like, of him just singing this song at the top of his lungs.
Like right in your face?
Right in our face. Not aggressive, not, he's smiling, he's singing very beautifully, but we have no idea who he is or what he is doing and why he is so close to us.
Yeah.
So then he stops and my coworker is like, he's like in his 40s, but he is like a Boy Scout. He is like the nicest guy. He's talking to him. And I've been to Portland before, so I am like
done
as
with
far,
it?
I'm like as far away as I can be, and still they know that I'm still there for them, but like I've inched away. I'm looking all around. I'm not engaging with this guy. My friend who's not from, you know, he's from Maine.
Right.
He's picking up on my vibe. He's like,
he's moving away.
He's doing the same thing. My coworker is just like, oh, like, that was so nice. What is that song about? Like, just talking and talking and talking to him. So this goes on for like 5 to 10 minutes, and I'm just waiting for the ask, you know?
Like, obviously. For money. This, like, that's, he did it for a reason. He wants
it
money.
For a reason, right? No, he wanted us to go to his YouTube channel and subscribe. So
what?
Yeah,
just like, this guy in Portland singing some Hindi music, and he wants you to check out.
He
his
gave
YouTube.
Us the link, and he's like, "Yeah, please check out my channel and subscribe if you would. That'd be great."
Wow. All right. Are we gonna? Is that what we're gonna do? Are we gonna go to Portland, set up a card table with all of our recording stuff, and like get in people's faces as we podcast and be like, "Hey, go check out our."
Yeah, I think that if I got in someone's face and started singing, and you know how I sing, I feel like I'd get punched more often than not in those exchanges.
People would be like, "This is a hate crime,
a crazy guy." Yeah, yeah.
I'd be the same way. People be like, "Yeah, you got to go to jail."
Yeah, right.
That was evil what
you
did.
Yeah, yeah. That's not okay, man. Not okay.
Well, that's crazy. Yeah, I just worked. I just went to work, and that's all I did.
Yeah, yeah. You ever have any crazy Portland stories?
Portland stories. No, I usually try to stay out of everybody's way, and I don't make eye contact with a lot of people. I work in Portland.
Yeah.
And so the few people that I've ever really made contact with, I've chosen them very specifically. It's usually comic book people.
So on your terms.
Or it's coffee people. Yeah. Like, there's a lady who owns a coffee joint in Portland. She sees me almost every morning. And she's, after about 4 months, we actually finally started talking.
Yeah, yeah. Not just about, no, I don't need room for cream.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, I'm an introvert when it comes to real life stuff, so I don't talk to anybody in Portland.
It's hard to know what to do in that shit. Like, if someone's like angry or like yelling or whatever, like it's very simple to understand, like, you know, to avoid that person or just walk away or whatever. But when they're singing a beautiful song of their people, like
their people,
it's hard to know. And we were there for an appointment, so like we
got
to
get somewhere.
I mean, we were already there, so we were waiting. So we couldn't just leave necessarily because we're meeting somebody there. Yeah. But anyway,
so are you saying that we're gonna bring more people like this to Canby? Is that why you're bringing this up? So you can.
I just thought it was a funny anecdote.
You don't think people would appreciate that here in Canby?
I don't know. Maybe.
I don't think so.
I think Canby people might get into a little culture. You don't think so?
I don't think that people would get into being accosted by YouTubers on the Canby streets.
That's true. So. Yeah, Indian YouTubers. So. Yeah. At least he didn't ask for money.
That's true.
So there was a story, Tyler, that came out through the Cami Now.
Yeah, man.
Page. And
super chill, dude.
It gave me kind of some weird vibes.
Yeah.
I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's what I was alluding to
it
earlier.
It was the story about the vehicle registration fee being approved by Clackamas County. Gave me some vibes. You know what I mean? Like, this is weird.
That's not what I was...
Oh, not what you were thinking.
That's not what I was talking
about.
Oh,
what were you thinking about?
The Cami vibe, dude.
Oh, I bet that it was confusing that I used the word vibe. I'm just realizing, my gosh, I'm so... Whoops.
I was trying to do my best, like, surfer voice earlier. That was the bit. Because the word vibe, to me, just sounds like...
Like, hey, man, what's the vibe?
Yeah, what's up, brah?
Hey, are you getting some good vibes?
It's a good name, though. Cami vibe.
Yeah. So, should we tell people what it is? If they haven't heard of it. So, the Cami Herald came out with this new story that they are starting a podcast.
Yeah.
So, we're not the only podcast in town. We're not the only local news podcast in Cami anymore. Right. So, if you've always wanted a local news podcast in Cami, now you have
now
two.
You've listened to it. I
haven't heard it yet.
And it's not out of spite or anything like that. I don't have time.
Yeah.
You made it sound like it's not so much about news, that it's more about what goes behind the news.
It's not
as an entity.
No, it is about news. It's just not like our show. So they don't like do the news.
Oh, okay.
You know, they just, it's actually interestingly, more, I guess, your traditional podcast when you think of a podcast. Because it's literally just a bunch of people sitting around a table with microphones just talking. So
if we had one more person, we could be that definition.
But we this is not the only thing we that's in our
people.
Show.
Yeah.
So it is interestingly more like that. It is not as bad as I was hoping. No, I'm just kidding. It was good. They did a good job, I think.
I wasn't lying when on the thread on Cami Now when I said if they need a good producer, I'm happy to help out.
You would produce it for them?
Yeah. I didn't listen to it, so like I said, I don't know if it sounds good or not.
And you know, like, I don't know any of the sound things. So
the sound,
like, if I can hear it, you know, then it's fine. If I can't hear it, I turn it up. Like,
I
listen to a lot of podcasts. Some of them are like incredibly professional and probably have staff and things, and some of them are just you know,
a guy with a tin can in his basement.
If I can hear, I mean, I listen to a lot of city council meetings and things like that, and those are not exactly professionally produced, so so I don't know, but I'm more talking about when I say it's good, I think just it had the editor John Baker, it had their two reporters and their sports reporter all on the mics, and I think they did a good job. It was entertaining. They kind of showed some character and some of their personality, and there were some funny bits, and then they just talked about news stories and things that are going on in Cami. So
and I think it's super exciting. I was talking to someone a little bit ago about what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really excited about what we do. Cami Now podcast is great.
Yeah.
And majority, like 99% of people who I talk to about it are like, that's super cool. That's really interesting. But there was this group of people I was talking to, they own business.
That aren't your mom.
Right.
And they don't
I've talked to two people, 99% of them.
Yeah.
It's a company up in Portland, so they run a business in Portland, and they also have a part of their business in New York. They're very big time, all of that. And when I talked to them, they asked me, you know, what are you up to? I told them about it, and they're like, so how many episodes is that going to be? Like 10 episodes,
like
maybe?
Like one?
And I was like...
Once a year?
I was like, actually, we're on like 45.
Yeah.
And they're like, really? How do you have that much to talk about in Cami? I was like, Cami's actually a hopping place. Like, it's got a lot going on. I mean, it's not always exciting, but, you know, we're doing more than just relaying information. We're talking about how we feel about that information. We're digging into the past, looking to the future, and, you know, I kind of gave them the whole spiel, and even afterwards, they were still kind of like, cool.
Yeah.
You could really do that in other towns, like a 10-part series or something. I was like, no, it's a bigger deal than that, man.
Yeah.
And so, like, when I've heard other people talk about the Cambie vibe, and they're like, oh, it's a very niche thing. It's, you know, niche thing. Niche?
Niche, I don't know, would be like Friedrich Nietzsche.
Right, I think. That's why I corrected myself. I was like, yeah. Nietzsche, that's not right. A very niche thing.
Ubermensch.
Then, you know, it's like, I don't want to put anybody down for doing what they want to do. And I talk to people all the time who are like, oh, I want to try this podcast because this one idea. And I'm always encouraging them. It's like, everyone should have a podcast.
We are pro podcasting.
We are.
Like, we are. People kind of ask, like, whoa, what do you think about that? Like, we're, if people want to get into podcasting, we support that.
100%. Me personally, I know Frankie does, but like, I'm avid about it. I'm like foaming at the mouth. I want everyone to have a podcast.
He's literally foaming. You guys can't see him. It's really, it's really gross, actually.
But like, I'm all about people doing what they want to do. And if the Cambie vibe is something where these people who work at the Herald, this is a good way for them to, you know, reach out to the community more. Maybe it's just a fun way to de-stress about a lot of the stuff that they're dealing with.
They've been working on this for over a year.
I don't know. Like, okay, let me finish with saying the positive. I'm super happy with them. I think it's super cool, and I want to support them and what they're doing. I wasn't lying.
Yeah.
If they want me to produce it, I can help out.
Tyler at CanBeNowPod.com.
Yes! Thank you. Yeah. Tyler at CanBeNowPod.com. If you have any production ideas, let me know.
So now we're going to go into the negative?
That was my one thing.
Okay.
My
you
one
haven't
thing,
heard it, so.
Is, you know, when they wanted to talk about how they've been working on this for a year, seems like either that's a lie or a reason why it won't work out for him. Because A, it's a lie.
Well, let's explain that. So the story came out. It was very short. It was just an announcement. And we shared it to the Cambie Now page.
Cambie Now page.
Yep. I did. And somebody took a screenshot of the story.
Yep.
Because they have a paywall, and, you know, so they were showing what it
proving
said.
That it was more it, there was no story behind the paywall. Is what they were proving with that photo.
Okay. Yeah, right, because you can only see the first bit, so they're showing the whole story. Yeah. Anyway, later, my wife, she read it, and she's like, oh, they said that they've been working on it for a year. And I was like, no, the story didn't say that, and she said that it did. And so we went back, and they had added that after the fact. I don't know how long or whatever, but it had been because, you know, it wasn't in the screenshot.
The original story.
The screenshot that the person had posted. Yeah. It didn't say that, but then now it does. So some time after they, you know, maybe after they saw the response, I don't know.
Yeah.
But the response where people were sort of saying, oh, so interesting, you know, that there's another local news podcast in town.
It's
kind of like what you guys are doing.
Right.
That had been added, and then in the podcast they did mention that as well. That's how they opened it. It's like, oh, we've been working on this for so long, and it's finally happening.
For over a year. They specifically said we've been working. This has been in the works for over a year.
I think that it is. It's possible that it could be true that maybe they've had some big idea. Yeah. To
well,
do.
Let me get into my two part thing real quick.
Okay.
Just one, it's either a lie or it's a reason why it's not going to work out for them. If it's a lie, it's a lie because they wanted to feel like they had more of a foothold.
They didn't
on
get
the situation.
Idea from us,
right?
Is what they're
they
trying
needed to separate themselves from us. And you know what? I understand it. They are trying to do their own thing and have their own identity, and then they're doing a podcast, which is all that we do,
right?
You know, and so maybe they just needed to have that in there. If they have really been working on this for over a year, if they have really been taking a year to start a podcast, the bureaucracy and red tape behind that they must go through with Pamplin and anything is so ridiculous that it cannot sustain itself.
Yeah.
It took you and me 1 month. And I'm not
like
trying
3
to
weeks.
Yeah, I'm not trying to make this a look how great we are. Literally anyone can start a podcast in less than a month.
Oh yeah. You can start a podcast
in a day.
We did the business thing. We had to start it. But we literally, we went from zero to podcast, you know, registered with the state, a website and all that stuff, social media, in
everything.
About 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And with a format that is, you know, and I don't even know why you let me do it, but like it is, I didn't listen to a lot of podcasts at the time. I do now.
Right.
But at the time I was coming at it more from a very NPR style show. So that's why we, like, if you guys listen to other podcasts, a lot of them are not as sort of complicated as ours with all the different segments and all the different pieces. A lot of them are more like KB Vibe,
just conversate.
They just talk and then they stop talking and then they upload it to the internet.
Like, it should take, how long is their episode? An hour?
It's like an hour.
Yeah. So it should take them a total of an hour and a half to create that podcast. Yeah. An hour and a half.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, if it takes them a year to create something, that should take them less than a month. Then for them to sustain it, it's going to be really hard.
Yeah.
Because they have to check all their boxes and they have to get all the yeses before they're allowed to make any choice on how they're going to do anything.
I think the usual Occam's razor, right? The simplest, you know, answer is usually the correct one. Like, I think it probably was just like they saw people saying that they were only doing this because of us, and they wanted to say nuh-uh, so they added, right, "We've been working on it for a year," not realizing that that doesn't make them look good. That it takes a year for them to start something that's relatively simple. But anyway, I think they did a good job. It is super super niche. I think that. I enjoy it because I love hyper-local stuff.
And I can't complain about niche stuff because my other podcast has at most 40 listeners an episode.
Right. Right. So. Well, but it's broad interest.
Sure.
But anyway, you know, I talk to people about the KMB Splash Pad on the street. So, like, sure, I'll listen to, you know, people I don't people really talk know about, talking about the KMB Splash Pad. But how interesting is that to... I don't know. I mean, that is kind of our show, but we have other stuff. We have the news. We have we have the history. We have interviews with people. I think that Tanner Russ is a great reporter. He's their sports reporter. I think he does a really good job, but I don't know if I really care what his favorite movie is, you know? So I don't know. It's kind of interesting. It is cool that... you know, my personal belief, like what we've done did spark a competitor.
Yeah.
You know, that's just what it seems to be.
Super exciting.
And I think that's exciting. Like, you know, people were saying on Facebook, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. And that's really true. It is really validating. Like that they, I believe, saw what we were doing. So, hey, we could do that.
Yeah.
And they, I think, you know, did something that's not exactly what we're doing, which I think is great. You know, they kind of did their own take on it. And like I said, I think it's a good job. And if people like it, like, that's great. I, you know, more power to you. I hope you still listen
honestly,
to ours. But
podcasting
yeah.
is not necessarily a zero sum game.
No,
you can
no,
listen to several podcasts in a day.
Sure.
You know, and you know, if that's the case, I want people to listen to as many podcasts as possible. So I'm not going to tell them not to listen to another show.
Yeah.
At cool. all. We're not competitors, really. We're really not. It's two different formats, two different shows.
Yeah.
There's some disagreement there.
No, I was nodding. They can't see me nodding, so I forgot I'm supposed to talk.
You have to talk, or else people, silence says more than words.
Okay, cool. Well, that's that. Our next segment is really cool. This weekend, there was the Iwo Jima ceremony at the Canby Adult Center, which Canby, as far as I know, it's pretty unique in communities that acknowledge the bloodiest battle of World War II, I believe, and for U.S. losses. And I believe the bloodiest or the most U.S. Marine casualties of any battle in history.
Really?
I believe, yeah. So it was kind of a major turning point in that war.
Yeah.
Many, many Marines lost their lives, and the ceremony was much longer than I expected, but it was incredibly powerful and moving. I say that because I had my kids, so I thought it was going to be this, like, 10-minute outdoor ceremony. They were going to shoot guns. My kids would like that, you know, which they did, but then they went inside and talked for a long time, which I enjoyed. But the kids definitely got a little antsy. And then the breakfast was the most amazing breakfast I've ever had.
Like, I thought you were going to go the other way with it. It
you
was
would,
because
like this
Canby
Adult Center, right?
Yeah.
Like, I was not expecting it to be great.
Right.
It was amazing.
Super good.
It was
good.
Like the best sausages I've ever had in my life. So
I don't know.
I ate four of them.
Not a paid advertisement. Have you been to Pappy's Greasy Spoon because their sausages.
I don't know if I had their sausages.
Oh, man.
Good?
Oh, yeah.
I'll have to try that. Thank you for saying not a paid advertisement. So, we talked to Irene Brashears, one of the organizers. I believe the organizer of this one, and she's been involved with it ever since it started back in 95. So we'll kick it over to that. Thanks for listening. Okay, can you just tell me your name and who you're with?
Okay, my name is Irene Brashears. I'm with the Cambie Aurora VFW 6057 Auxiliary here in Cambie.
Cool, and what are we doing out here?
Well, this is our 24th annual Iwo Jima flag raising ceremony, February 23rd, 2019, here at the Cambie Adult Center. And we're celebrating the 74th anniversary of the end of World War II.
Cool. And I think that not very many communities do a ceremony around Iwo Jima. Is that right? Why do you think it's important here in Cambie?
That's correct. My husband, Mike Brashears, back in 94, thought, what can we do to honor our World War II veterans? Because it was coming to the 50th anniversary of the end of World War II, 1995, and so he wanted to do something to commemorate and honor these veterans. He did not know that there was a global Department of Defense celebration. They were calling it the 50th anniversary commemoration of the end of World War II, and it just coincided because a friend of ours in Vancouver, Washington, was part of the DOD global celebration.
So
they got the information together. So my husband's dream for Cambie became a part of the commemoration that was being done globally.
So you've been a part of it ever since the beginning, 24 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
1994 to 1995.
Yeah.
We had a committee. My husband had a committee going so that Cambie could be a year-long celebration, which this Iwo Jima flag raising ceremony was a kickoff event on actually February 19th, 1995.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you think it's important to still honor those who died in Iwo Jima and in the that war in general? Why do you think it's important to keep those memories and honor those who fought and are still with us?
Well, they say, you know, if we don't remember our history, we're doomed to repeat the failures. And this is a good example that war is just affects everyone, not only locally, but worldwide, because this was a World War event, and it just affected everyone. And for us to not remember the sacrifices, I mean, within our own families that were called to serve, both on the home front and overseas for the war effort, it's a great travesty for the people to not remember all these great sacrifices.
Sure, sure.
And you have living history still walking amongst us.
Yeah.
And that's a great honor because they can share. And then as we grow up, we can remember and pass it on to those in our lives to pass and remember and not to forget.
For sure. Living history, like, for example, your father,
100-year-old
World War II veteran and Congressional Medal of Honor winner.
Yes, that's true. He's he was MIS, Military Intelligence Service, and he was part of the Battle for Okinawa. That was after Iwo Jima. And then the next battle was the Battle for Okinawa, which was the springboard to Japan. If Japan did not surrender, they was going to be an all-out fight for Japan. And so it was very critical for the airstrip landings of Iwo Jima and then to the island of Okinawa. My father is Okinawan American. He's called a Kibe, which is born in West LA, West Los Angeles, California, and then he was raised in Okinawa. But then he came back here when he was about 17, 18. And oddly enough, he was drafted in the United States Army October 1941 when he had dual citizenship, United States. And then when he went back, he had Japanese citizenship. But when the war broke out on December 7, 1941, he was in the service, his Japanese citizenship automatically was rescinded because he was an American veteran.
And what was his name, or what is his name?
My father's name is Frank Seiyu Higashi.
And how soon can you get him on the podcast to talk to us?
I guess he can talk anytime.
Yeah, that'd be great. So we were here, you know, the ceremony happened. It was huge, practically burst out the doors of the Canby Adult Center here. It must be cool to see it grow over the years. And what do you think of the support that you see from this community?
This is really wonderful because it's working, that people are remembering our veterans, and with all the wars that we have since, particularly ever since 9/11, that they're really just really behind their veterans, and they really see the great sacrifice, because the veterans are younger, and the conflicts and the wars and the situations are even more intense, and they're realizing we have to be behind not only the veterans but their families, and we're just so happy to see that. Like for yourself, you came with your children to come and support our veterans and say thank you and to remember. So this is a day of remembrance of the great sacrifice that was in Iwo Jima.
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes I like to say is JFK. He said, "You can tell the quality of a nation not just by the citizens it produces, but by the kinds of citizens that it remembers and honors." And I think that that's something really important to remember. Like events like this is why it's important, because we're not just thanking those veterans, but we're honoring the values and the things that they stand for, and hopefully helping to incorporate them into our own lives and how we live.
Well said. That's exactly right, because we do want to perpetuate that, because you cannot take freedom for granted. You cannot take for granted the sacrifice and what it took, you know, for us to get where we are. I mean, we still have issues, but we're still focusing, moving forward for democracy and for the fairness and justice for not only us, but for other countries, because we've seen what happened in countries that don't have that freedom.
Sure. Well, thanks so much, Irene, for talking to us. I'm going to let you have your breakfast, okay?
Thank you.
Thanks for putting this on. We'll be here. Thanks.
More than 1.2 million Americans receive internet, TV, and telephone services from community cooperatives like Direct Link. They believe that their role revolves around partnerships. Whether sponsoring a local event, hosting educational classes, or investing in fiber internet technology, Direct Link is here for our community because they are a part of our community.
Beyond just working in Canby, most of DirectLink's employees live here as well. DirectLink's investment in the local area reaches past business interests and extends into the everyday lives of neighbors, friends, and families. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guest today, Jensen Huffman, and to all of our sponsors who really make it possible to do what we do. We encourage you to check them out and help support the local small businesses who support us. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episode.
Wow, if you thought today's soapbox was a little dramatic, you ain't seen nothing yet. In our next episode, we'll be hanging out with some of our favorite people.
I get it!
Our favorite people, the talented kids at the Canby High School Drama Club, as we talk about their spring show, Our Town, which opens Friday.
If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions for how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Canby Now, or on our website, canbynowpod.com.